awkward basketball scene. For some reason, this is something that happens in lots of movies. People don't know basketball?
Yeah.
You'd think, like, hockey. Hockey is more obscure than basketball. Less people have seen it.
Mm-hmm.
And they do get hockey wrong in sports all the time. But whenever there's a movie that has one person playing basketball, but it's not a full basketball game. And sometimes when it's a full basketball game, they're terrible. It doesn't make any sense.
Right.
Like, spatial reasoning goes out the window. As soon as you put the camera on a basketball court, in a bad movie, it shows so quickly. I don't know why that's the litmus test to see if it's a good movie. Do you ever see Catwoman, like the Halle Berry one?
No.
It has this basketball scene, which I'll probably put a link to in the show notes because this is now our cold open.
Right.
And it's so bad. You watch it and you just cringe and you feel sorry because Halle Berry is a talented actor.
Yeah.
And she's so bad in this. And then in this one, Sigourney Weaver plays basketball and she has like this sexy basketball scene with fucking Hellboy. And then somebody tries to hit her in the face with a dumbbell and like that comes out of nowhere. But they have her playing basketball so awkwardly. And she doesn't know how to play basketball, clearly. No. Don't make her do it.
Yeah.
And it's always in a scene to make them look like, oh, look how cool they are.
Right.
Remember when Andrew Garfield played basketball in the Spider-Man one?
Yeah.
And he was like emo and dunking on guys?
Yeah.
Oh, brutal.
He dunked on people.
Yeah, he was dunking on people. Full circle.
Full circle.
So that's how you can tell it's going to be a bad movie, is when they get basketball wrong.
Yeah.
Alien 4, Catwoman, Spider-Man, whatever it was. But also 4.
Filmmakers, stop trying to include basketball. You're doing it wrong.
Spike Lee, when he made a basketball movie, he got an NBA player to star in a movie who has never acted before.
Oh.
Because he said it's easier to get a basketball player to act than an actor to play basketball.
I feel like I've heard that quote before, but yeah.
He got game. It's a weird movie. I've rewatched it. I loved
it
as a kid.
That's the movie? Yeah. He got game?
Yeah, I loved it as a child. And I rewatched it this year. And I was like, oh, it's way more strange than I remember. I think I still like it, though.
Hmm.
But that's not what we're talking about.
No. Nope.
We're talking about law stuff. Well, law, we're talking about movies things. And things.
Yes, movies and things.
Oh, man. I don't know. You do an intro today. How about?
Great. So, hi. Welcome to another episode of I Love This, You Should Too, a podcast with me, Samantha, and him, Indy. And this month, we are talking about the law and movies about the law. Hi, Indy.
Hi.
So last week we talked about Legally Blonde and that kicked off our law month. So this week Indy is going to be giving a spoiler-free thing of the fortnight and revealing our movie, and I may also have a spoiler-free thing of the fortnight.
You may?
I might. We'll see.
I think we should know.
There's a high probability.
Okay.
Okay. All will be revealed.
All right. Well, we will all be on the edge of our seat to see if you do, in fact, have a thing of the fortnight.
Right.
We'll see soon. But until then, maybe I'll give mine.
Hey, what's your thing of the fortnight?
Wow. We are good at segues. It's like we've been doing this for 200 some episodes.
Yeah.
So my thing of the week is the 1992 film, My Cousin Vinny.
Okay.
So I actually saw My Cousin Vinny in theaters.
No.
And looking at it now, I should not have. I was a little child.
This is another one of those you saw it too early's?
I guess. At the time, I didn't feel like it. My sister took me to see it, and I see why she wanted to see it. I don't know why I went. Seems very odd to take a small child to My Cousin Vinny, but I actually remembered quite a bit of it. So I rewatched it this week for the podcast, and you know what? Holds up.
Huh.
Have you ever seen this?
No, and I don't really know anything about it, so I'm looking forward to hearing about it.
It came out in 92. It's a comedy directed by Jonathan Lynn, who did Clue, and I think a lot of people haven't seen the Clue movie. If you haven't, go watch it. Do yourself a favor. Clue is a surprisingly good movie, and the fun thing about that movie is when it shipped to theaters, there were, I don't know how many endings, let's say 5, and different theaters would get different endings.
Oh, so where you went and saw it, you'd have a different movie than like someone who saw it across town.
Yeah. Imagine that in the 80s, and you talk about the ending of a movie with your friend who saw it, and they're like, wait a minute, that's not what happened. That would be crazy. Because now, of course, it would get, everyone would know that that was a bit as soon as it was released.
Right.
But back then, you didn't know.
But also, what a good way to get people to see it again.
I think that's what their thinking was, but I don't think it worked like that.
I feel like in the era of social media, that would work better.
Oh, maybe.
Because of the like buzz that comes around it.
You want to see them all.
You want to see them all. So then you're going to go. And I feel like things are communicated better. So you'd know what theaters had what ending maybe. And like that kind of thing. And then you'd be able to go to like all five theaters and see it. But then you're seeing this movie five times at whatever cost the ticket is. Yeah. And that's a very smart marketing ploy.
I think the movie didn't do terribly well, but it was good. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about My Cousin Vinny, which stars Joe Pesci. Uh-huh. He is the titular Cousin Vinny. Marissa Tomei, Ralph Macchio, Mitchell Whitfield, Lane Smith, and Bruce McGill, and Fred Gwynne. So the premise of this movie is Macchio and Whitfield play these two New York guys. They're from New York, and they are, I believe, traveling across the U.S. to go to school. They're going to go to university. Mm-hmm. And they are in Alabama. They go and get gas and buy some snacks, and they're very poor. And they get arrested and put on trial in Alabama for a murder they did not commit.
Well, that sounds like a nightmare.
It does. This actually shares so much with the movie we're going to talk about, and a little bit of In the Heat of the Night.
Yeah.
There's some similar things, but this is a straight up comedy, so it doesn't really touch on too much of
serious.
So they can't afford a lawyer, and they call Macchio's family and they say, oh, well, you know, your cousin Vinny graduated from law school, so we're going to send him on over. So he has just graduated. I think he's been a lawyer for 6 weeks now. This is going to be his first case. And he arrives in the small town, Alabama. He's this Brooklyn guy. And most of the comedy of this movie is kind of one of your standard fish out of water things where he is wearing a leather jacket. And then the judge says, you can't wear that into court. And there's all that kind of stuff. And just how much they stand out in this world. And he keeps getting charged with contempt of court like every day. So he has to go to jail with his defendants often. Every day there's something different that prevents him from sleeping. That's like a running joke as well, whether it's a train or the rooster or whatever. And it's your kind of your standard fish out of water comedy. And it is very good at that. But what made this movie kind of memorable are those like extra things. First of which was the performance of Marissa Tomei. I think this was one of her kind of breakouts. Now she's playing Aunt May. So
right, yeah.
And I think people always make the joke that Aunt May is getting younger and younger.
Yeah.
That's not the case. It's that actors look younger and younger.
Yeah, they've stopped aging.
She's the same age, I think, as the Spider-Man Aunt May from like part one of the Tobey Maguire ones. Yeah. But she just looks like better than I do, despite being that age.
That's a thing that is happening now is you're watching older things and you're like, I'm that age. And you're like, oh, no. They look...
I watched Cheers and realized everyone was supposed to be younger than me.
Yeah. There was something we were watching the other day and they're like, I'm 35. And I was like, I'm 35 and you look like a grandmother. Like, it was, yeah. So I feel like people are getting younger now.
It seems that way. So Marissa Tomei won the Academy Award for Best Supporting Actress in this movie. And there, do you know about the theories of that?
No.
So people always said, oh, did you know that was the one where they read the wrong name and they just went with it?
Oh.
Because they're like, how would Marissa Tomei win for My Cousin Vinny? And then I watched it. She's fantastic. It's not the typical performance for a best actress or best supporting actress because it's a side comedic role and those don't win awards anymore. Right. But you look at what she was up against. I haven't seen all of them, but it wasn't anything huge.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't a big year.
I guess not to, I haven't seen them all, so I can't say too much, but she was so charming and so fun and so hilarious. And she has so many good outfits. I think you came in and saw a little bit of one of her outfits.
Oh yeah, she was wearing like this like bodysuit thing.
A floral bodysuit that's somehow also backless but high-necked.
Yeah. One of those modest in the front, party in the back kind of backs. Like,
as modest as a like tight bodysuit could be.
Yeah.
But she's so funny. Joe Pesci, I like Joe Pesci. I think he's very funny. The judge and him have like a really fun back and forth throughout the movie. And this movie is also well recognized for how it portrays the courtroom setting. In fact, a bunch of legal papers came out about this movie. One was called 10 Things Every Trial Lawyer Could Learn from Vincent LaGuardia Gambini, who is my cousin Vinny.
Uh-huh.
And that was written by a federal judge in the U.S. District Court.
Oh.
And he wrote a paper on like, yeah, this was great. And there was a bunch of other papers that came out as well. But my favorite quote was that he is a terrible example of what they teach you in law school, but an excellent example of what they don't. So he gets a lot of the formal stuff wrong,
right?
And that's part of the movie. But this movie, looking at it, is one of the least serious takes of what's happening in the courtroom.
Oh.
But from trial lawyers, they'll say that this is incredibly accurate and is actually studied in film, or not in film school, in law school, which
oh,
I thought
fun.
Was very odd because it's such a silly movie.
Mm-hmm.
But it is your kind of classic whodunit. Writing wrongs, and there's going to be some special investigation, and of course there's going to be one person who has this specific knowledge, very much like a Legally Blonde.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you wouldn't expect them because of their outward appearance, but they know these things. Maybe it's a very similar situation where people go like, oh, a woman that looks like that wouldn't know these kind of things, but she does.
Huh.
So maybe Legally Blonde took a lot from My Cousin Vinny, perhaps.
Maybe.
So go check it out. I'm not going to spoil the ending. I hope I didn't already, but it's also from 92. So, you know, it's a fun movie. It's easy. I think it's like 2 hours long, but it flies by. It's just a nice, light, fun movie that also has some apparently good legal representation. Not that it has a good lawyer representing it, but it represents
within.
Yeah. Oh, one other thing I do have to mention, though. Joe Pesci has released many albums. Like, he was a lounge singer for a time before he was an actor.
Really?
And he has one album called Vincent LaGuardia Gambini Sings Just For You. So he took the character's name and put it in the title of this, but he's not singing the songs as the character.
Oh.
So it's confusing. It's also really bad. It's quite bad. He has one song called Wise Guy that where he raps and it's rough. But he has a song
that
called
awful.
Yo Cousin Vinny, and that's kind of the one. So here's a little bit of Yo Cousin Vinny.
Fredo was my cousin. He couldn't make his bail. I was talking to his father. He said, let him rot in jail. But I pitied his poor mother. She said I was a prince. I paid his bail, he's out of jail. I ain't seen the fuck since.
Hey, Cousin Vinny, yo, Cousin Vinny, is there anything that you could do for me? Hey, Cousin Vinny,
yo,
yo, Cousin Vinny, it ain't that long, you must remember me.
Good old Cousin Vinny. All right, well, while we finish up that quality music, Samantha, what is your legal thing of the fortnight?
Well, I thought I'd go all the way back to junior high and discuss the book that made me aware of, like, the law and segregation and how corrupt the United States are. And we're going to talk about 1961's novel by Harper Lee, To Kill a Mockingbird. I assume you've read this.
It will surprise no one to know that I am quite familiar with this.
I assumed you were because I feel like everybody has read this novel. We did it as a novel study, I think, in grade 8 or grade 9. And it kind of stuck with me. It was one that, like, it wasn't as exciting as some of the novel studies that we did, but it had a really good message of like racial inequality and the justice system and doing the right thing and that kind of thing that kind of stuck with me. So I really enjoyed reading it back then. It's about a small town in Alabama, and it's kind of a coming-of-age story and chronicles the childhood of Scout and Jem Finch as their father, Atticus, defends a black man falsely accused of rape and their lives as they go through this trial. Does anything stand out for you from this novel?
Oh, where do I
so
start?
So many things.
So I do know this very well. So while you were talking, I kept wanting to interject. I think it did come out in 1960. What I'm always surprised with, because I've also read it recently, and how little of the story has to do with the trial.
True.
Because we think of that as like, that's the big thing.
That's
Atticus
the thing.
And the trial. And it's not to Scout. It is a very big part of it, but what strikes me upon rereadings, because I think when I was probably grade 7, 8, whatever it was where I read it, it was about the trial and it was about the sequence when the mob comes to lynch. Oh, I forgot his name now. Tom Robinson. Because he was just busting up that shiffer robe. The word shiffer robe is also what stuck in my mind for all these years. But those sequences where it's more cinematic, almost, like the speech Atticus gives at the end of the trial, those things stick in my mind. But upon reading it as an adult, I think one of the things the book does the best is it is such a good portrayal of a child, of how a child thinks. And I think it takes place over 3 years, and we get to see that growth. And we get to see this girl who first is asking, not even first, it's quite a way in, like, what can my dad do? She's asking people because she's disappointed in this man because he's an older guy. He's different than all of the other fathers. And she's like, what's he do? What's so good about him? And there's the bit where he's a great shot and he shoots that dog.
Yes. Yeah.
That's something. And then that starts. And then you only get it kind of through the narration. It's not all about reflecting as an adult, but we get a little tinge of that towards the end. Mm-hmm. And her learning and her respecting is what strikes me upon reading it as an adult as being truly special about the writing of it. Because, of course, politically, socially, and culturally, we can talk about what's so important about that. But the writing of a child who is growing and earning respect for her father, I thought that was so well done and something that's not talked about as much.
Yeah, the discovering the way the world works and the like loss of childhood that Scout goes through because of the trial and all of the things that she hears and sees around town and hears from like people. It was really interesting to me to hear someone go through that in a book that we're reading in school, because it felt kind of taboo and kind of like something that you don't want children knowing about. And it felt a little bit too eye-opening, and it seemed like almost like we shouldn't be reading it.
Oh, that's interesting, because I had a different takeaway. I wouldn't ever talk about this as a loss of innocence or the end of a childhood, but I definitely see where that's coming from, because how Scout sees it, she's being enlightened. She's learning. And I think maybe because at a very young age, I was actually very interested in similar things.
You were going to see My Cousin Vinny in theaters.
Well, not that. It's like when I was a 10-year-old, my posters on my wall were Charles Barkley, Patrick Waugh, and Martin Luther King. Mm-hmm. Like I was socially conscious as a young child because of my sisters.
Yeah.
So things like that, when I read it in this book, it didn't seem to me like she was losing her innocence. When I was Scout's age, I'd already been told to go back to a country I'm not from many times. So I didn't feel like that to me. It felt like her growing and learning. And maybe you could argue those are the first steps into adulthood, but clearly it's not the adulthood of all these other, you know what, I'm going to just start talking about To Kill a Mockingbird.
Sorry.
I have so much to say about To Kill a Mockingbird.
I hit on a topic that you're very, very into.
It's such a good novel. If you haven't read it since you were a kid, read it now. It holds up. It's a quick read, and it's so good. Mm-hmm. It's not like, oh yeah, this was important. I see why they made us read this. It's more than that. It's entertaining. It's well-paced. The characters are fantastic, and it's just a straight-up good novel. even if it didn't have the social implications mm-hmm. and the importance that it's historically had, even without that, it's just a good book.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like it's really interesting. This is not what I was expecting when we were talking about this, but you and I have very different takes on it, because mm-hmm. this is kind of my first introduction into segregation and the South and law and just kind of learning about how different things were not that long ago. And it was my first introduction into things other than the world that I was like kind of living in. And I admit I spent my elementary years in a very white neighborhood and then
me
moved.
Too.
Yes, you did. But I wasn't around people of kind of other ethnicities, and I wasn't learning from people who had other life views. And I feel like when we moved to Edmonton and I was in a school that had more kind of ethnic diversity and that kind of thing, I still wasn't aware of it, or I didn't really know where to look to learn about it. And I feel like this was one of the first times that I really saw diversity and how like discrimination happens in a book, and kind of learned about it in a safe way. And I think that's kind of important. And I'm really interested to kind of hear about how you had a different read on it coming from a different background than I did.
Well, I was definitely exposed to things like this, not just like in my personal life, but in 92, also the Malcolm X biopic, the Spike Lee one, came out. Mm. And my sister, different sister, Shannon this time, took me to see that in the theater. So I saw the Malcolm X movie when I was like 8 years old. Wow. Or whatever. And it was long and it had an intermission in it. So like I had to get special permission from my mom to go out on a school night to stay out until like close
like a
to 4 midnight
hour movie.
To watch the Malcolm X biopic. But Shannon was like, no, this is important. He should see this. Oh, wow. And it was. And that's what shaped me. So if you're watching that when you're like 8, 9,
yeah.
To Kill a Mockingbird when you're 14,
it's
isn't
not that different.
Shocking.
Yeah.
It is still valuable, though, mm-hmm. because this is a movie that was different because of mostly because of the character of Atticus Finch. And then the stuff that I was talking about with the childhood view on things, that doesn't come through until I wasn't a child. Until right. as an adult, I can appreciate
yeah.
that. But I know now so many movies, or this book and so many other things, get in that classification of like, oh, a white guy comes along and saves
right,
ends
yeah.
racism. And you know me, I make that claim on a lot of the things.
Very true.
I do not think
no.
this falls into that, because...
And this is totally the
again,
exception.
You know what? I'm not going to say because why. Because this is going to flow into my movie for next week.
Please take
over. Is To Kill a Mockingbird.
Okay.
So we don't need to get into everything here. So let's continue on the book, and I won't discuss it at length. I'll try so hard to not talk about the book, because the book is better. The book's so good.
Is it? Like better than the movie?
I haven't seen the movie since I was 15.
I haven't seen the movie since junior high. Because
yeah.
we did the novel study and then you get to watch the yeah. movie at the end as the reward. So yeah. I feel like I'm really excited to see it, because I do remember the movie also having like an impact on me after.
I think it's great, but I've read the book as an adult and mm-hmm. it's, I don't know if you can top that.
Okay.
So finish up on the book before we move on.
Yeah, I don't know how much more I have to say on it, because I feel like I don't want to like...
step on the toes of the next episode?
Yeah, I feel like I don't know how much more I want to say. And you know I'm always very careful to not like give spoilers in the pre-episode. Mm. So I feel like it's an important book. It had a really big impact on me as like a young reader. And I was a very voracious reader in junior high and high school. And I was always the person who like put their hand up to read out loud in class during novel study. I feel like you probably
did
were
you?
Too.
No.
Oh, really?
No, I didn't get I was talkative, but I wasn't comfortable reading in front of people until much later in life. And now I do it every day of my life.
I would read nonstop if the teacher had let me. And this was one book where I was not familiar, like, with the pronunciation of things, because I don't really know Alabama.
Oh, yeah, because you would say like Maycomb.
Yeah.
Instead of Maycomb.
So like Shakespeare, I was pretty comfortable with reading out loud because it's like pretty easy to like figure out with the British accent and then like the pronunciation of like Old English and that kind of thing. But Alabama was like a totally different accent and pronunciation of things. Sure. And I remember struggling a bit with this.
That's not where I thought you would go when you're talking about reading this aloud.
Oh.
Because there are a lot of use of the N-word in this. So how did you do that part?
Oh, we were just told that you just skip over it or you say like black person or I think we were just told to say like black. That was like the the use of. Because we had a whole talk about it. I remember that. We had a whole talk about it before. And they're like, if you see this word as you're reading it out loud, these are like three things that you can say instead. And this is why it's bad. And like, this is why we don't say, not bad, but like, this is why we don't say it out loud as non-black people. And you just like, we're just not going to say it over and over again as we're reading this book. And I remember our English teacher was really good and like very patient with us and like, explaining why we weren't going to be saying that. And I kind of learned very early on that like it's not an okay word to say when you're not from that ethnicity.
One thing I do remember about doing this in school is my teacher, when we were talking about it, at one point said like, wow, aren't you glad that there's no racism anymore? And I was just like, what? And she was like, there isn't. And she firmly believed like that doesn't happen anymore.
Oh my God.
And at first I was going to be like, oh sure. Like trials like this don't happen. No, actually they do still.
And this
like,
was the '90s.
This was the '90s.
Oh my God.
Yep.
Oh my God.
Well, I've heard that in the last of course. 5 years as well.
Like, we've all heard that, but like, wow.
To be a teacher and say that.
That's crazy to me. I now have a greater appreciation for my junior high English teacher.
Yeah, that's very good.
They said, like, here's three things you can say instead.
Here's context.
Here's context for why we don't say that. Here's, like, examples of, like, why it's okay for people from that ethnicity to say that word. Because, of course, it's in, like, music and stuff. Racism isn't over, guys. Just in case you didn't know that.
Before we go into the movie, did you read the sequel?
No. I kind of wanted to before we did this episode and I've been busy. What's it called?
Go Set a Watchman.
Go Set a Watchman. I knew it was Watchman something. Did you read it?
Yes.
Okay.
The biggest problem with that book is it was marketed as a sequel.
Right.
It's not.
Is it just like another?
So it is in our real world, Harper Lee wrote Go Set a Watchman before To Kill a Mockingbird. She wrote it. It was rejected everywhere. She couldn't get it published. She then took some ideas from that and wrote To Kill a Mockingbird. That's how it came about. And then many, many years later, 50 some years later, they discovered the manuscript and they're like, well, To Kill a Mockingbird is one of the biggest novels of all time. Of course, we're going to publish this sequel.
Right.
So it has the same characters, but they're not the same characters. In a way.
It was like a pre-draft of To Kill a Mockingbird and then became the post-draft.
Yeah. So it plays as a sequel because it is about Scout, who's been living in New York. Now she's in her 20s. She goes back to Macomb and she's going to go like see her father and see everybody. And it's about her in the town.
Huh.
And I think I'm going to give spoilers kind of in the next minute. And I'm going to tell you why I hate it.
Okay.
But in the spoilers, I don't think I'm going to spoil things because not much happens in this book. That's why it was never published. That's why it was rejected. It's not very good.
Not enough plot.
It's not terrible. If I just read this book, I'd be like, okay, fine. But being billed as a sequel to Kill a Mockingbird, it is a travesty. Hmm. So if you don't want to hear anything about it and you plan on reading it, skip ahead maybe 2 minutes.
Okay.
So Scout comes back and nothing really happens. Jem's dead.
What?
But the thing of this book is, the thing that everyone talks about is, this movie is Atticus the Racist. And I don't like the idea when people are like, oh, this new sequel, this new version, this ruined my childhood, this ruined the source material. Nothing ruins the first movie. And then this came along. I read them, of course, back to back most recently. And It does. It makes you feel so differently because this is old man Atticus, and he's like, I hate black people. They're the worst. They're ruining society.
What?
And from like the hero.
Yeah.
Such a hero.
Who stands up for someone who has no agency in the South.
So they talk about that trial in passing. They're like, oh, but once didn't you represent a black guy who was on trial for rape? And he's like, yeah, that happened once. And that's all Scout says about it. She goes like, oh, yeah, didn't that happen once? That's all the it plays in her mind. When to us who have read To Kill a Mockingbird, that hurts.
Hero. Yeah.
And then you know how Atticus has that great speech towards the end in the trial and so many speeches, not as long, but so many speeches of just like little pearls of wisdom throughout. He gets one big speech and it's not about empathy or acceptance like his old ones were. Here it's about states' rights. He's talking in depth for pages, and as does his brother, about states' rights and how the victim of desegregation is really the Southern white man and how he's overlooked in all of this and we need demand more states' rights. And sure, we shouldn't have slaves anymore, but like to make them the same as us, they don't have the mind for it. They are like children. It would be disrespectful to people like me if you gave them the same rights as me. Isn't that a total bummer? And I don't think the book takes that point of view because Scout says, like, no, you're wrong. But Scout also doesn't have a coherent argument for why Atticus is wrong. And she does say, like, I still love you, though.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so upsetting.
It is.
Oh, man.
And the whole thing about classism, because that's a big part of
To Kill a Mockingbird.
Within the white community. And Scout is going to potentially marry this guy, but then they're like, he's trash. You can't marry trash like that. And that was one of the tenets of, because there's the Cunninghams in the first one and how they are invited to sit at the same table. That's what Atticus does. And now he's like, don't marry that white trash. So it was a real hard, I almost want to reread To Kill a Mockingbird again right after Go Set a Watchman to kind of get the taste out of your mouth.
Oh, man. Yeah, because like, rough. One of the reasons that I picked it as my like thing of the fortnight is because Atticus is such a like upstanding character in literary history.
Yeah.
And I feel like so let down by that second book.
Yeah.
Wow.
They shouldn't have published it.
I'm so sad.
They shouldn't have published it. It wasn't published in her lifetime. Why publish it now?
Yeah.
Money.
Yeah.
Don't read it. I don't know. Read it if you want. I'm never going to say don't read a book. But don't think of it as a sequel. Don't think of those characters as the same ones because it was written before and it's not written as a continuous story. So don't take it as one.
Wow.
So I just had to tell myself that that's not
the stuff. That's not it.
Calpurnia needs help and Atticus won't talk to her.
What?
They don't talk to her anymore. They don't go to that side of town.
Oh, and
they're
God.
Like, oh, the civil rights movement. It's just stirring up trouble is what Atticus's belief is.
Because what we need is more old white men.
That old white man from the first one, absolutely, we need more of those.
We need more of them, but not this new Atticus Finch. Wow. Okay, I'm very sad.
Yeah, it really bummed me out.
Yikes.
I had a real hard time with that one. So to get back into the hero Atticus mood, you know who could do that? Gregory fucking Peck. I love Gregory Peck. I thought his performance in Roman Holiday was like the only man who could possibly match Audrey Hepburn's charm in a movie.
Yeah.
And in To Kill a Mockingbird, he's great. Again, haven't seen it since I was a teenager. Haven't seen it in, that's a lot of years. I was going to say like 10 years when I was a teenager, but it's more than 10 years. 10 years ago when I was 15.
Yeah.
So
plus 20.
Yeah. So the movie To Kill a Mockingbird is going to be our big watch coming
Excellent.
Up. It is from 1962. It's a legal drama. It's a crime film. It was directed by Robert Mulligan. The screenplay was by Horton Foote and, of course, based on the Pulitzer Prize winning Harper Lee's 1960 novel of the same name. Gregory Peck is playing Atticus Finch. Maria Badham is Scout. And it also, which I did not realize, is the film debut of Robert Duvall,
Oh.
Because when I was a teenager, I probably didn't know who Robert Duvall was. So when I saw this, and I probably didn't recognize young Robert Duvall, that's for sure.
Interesting.
So it won 3 Academy Awards, including Best Actor, and was nominated for 8, including Best Picture, but did not win that one.
Oh.
It was restored and released on Blu-ray in 2012. So that's the version we are going to be watching. And you can watch this in all sorts of different places. I don't know about streaming services, but
probably
your library is going to have this one.
Absolutely.
So the biggest questions I have is, I haven't seen this in years.
Me neither.
Will it hold up?
Oh, yeah.
And can it live up to the novel, which was so, so good?
I feel like I need to get To Kill a Mockingbird from the library and just read it now.
I have it in the basement. I own a copy.
I don't read actual books.
Right.
I'll just get an audiobook, but that'll be... It'll be interesting to revisit this because I have such a golden memory of this book and how much I learned from it and how interesting it was to read and the like work we did around it. And I feel like I'm worried it's not going to stand up.
The book?
The book and the movie.
I confidently say the book will stand up.
Okay.
I know that book quite well. And man, it's good. It's very good.
Huh. Okay.
It moves too. It's paced nicely for a debut novel. Well, I guess not debut because Watchmen she wrote first and it's not paced nearly as well. But yeah, no, read the book. It'll hold up. The movie, that will be a question because so many of the brilliant things from the novel, like Scout reflecting on things or the lack of reflection, the things that she doesn't understand and her inability to express those types of things, that's a part of the book and that's handled beautifully in the book. How do you do that in a film? I assume it's going to have voiceover. I don't remember, but it must have voiceover as I assume adult Scout kind of telling the story like the book is. I also feel like maybe there's going to be a lot more of the trial because that seems to be what I remember from it.
That's kind of what I remember.
The trial is quite small in the novel. Also, for people thinking, like, do I really need to read the novel again? Do you remember how it ends? You out there and you, Samantha? I think the ending's going to surprise you.
I remember something, but I don't want to, like...
Yeah, I don't want to say it.
I don't want to say it now, so we'll discuss it next time. But, I'm really interested to know.
And the other thing I thought in my mind that was a big part is Boo Radley.
Uh-huh.
Not really. Boo Radley's tiny in the book. Yeah, there's not much Boo Radley at all. Not much trial, more trial than Boo Radley. But Boo Radley has a very small part of it.
Interesting, because yeah, that's such a big part of my memory.
Yeah.
Maybe because they have a catchy name.
Yeah.
I feel like that's not a name that you'd hear in Alberta.
Oh, I think it would be.
Yeah, you're right.
In the book, you get the Cunninghams and the Conninghams a lot more than Boo Radley.
Interesting. Hmm. Okay, well, next week we will be watching 1962's To Kill a Mockingbird.
And we'll probably talk about the book a little more that time too. We'll try to stay away from it when we can, but when we're comparing, I'm sure it's going to come up.
Of course.
All right, we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Court adjourned.